And coming back there, or actually welcoming you this morning, dear listeners, because obviously this is the first time I'm talking since the musical break obviously started at 5 a.m. And once again, specifically welcoming you to my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And obviously, as I do hope that you, you know, find yourself obviously at home and ultimately just waking up currently right now, or probably some of you would have woken up by now, rubbed out some of the sleep out of your eyes, and ultimately, you know, just getting into the particular emotions of your early morning sessions, which could be a myriad of things. I mean, it could go from just being able to, or just waking up early, or primarily waking up to do a physical activity, for example, like those very early birds that love jogging about, or specifically those that just like to stretch their limbs a little bit, you know, just to get the mobility starting off early. Whatever you're doing, whatever you, obviously your routine starts off on every particular morning session, welcome, good morning. I do hope you've got a cup of joe, meaning a cup of coffee in your hands, if you're a coffee drinker. Alternatively, let's not hope it's anything flammable, which obviously would indicate obvious problems or issues this early in the morning. However, welcome to my Sunday morning take. Now, as we always do here on my Sunday morning takes, we take a look at everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of else, a little bit of everything else in between, because there is one such particular conversation that has actually got me a little stumped this morning, because it is a very insightful conversation to have. Primarily, firstly, I'm impressed with the particular potato harvest that took place earlier this week. The impressed state, obviously, that I am speaking towards is one based upon the amount, the quantity, as well as also the particular, you know, investment that the, if you can call them, the proponents of that specific project, that potato harvest project, have obviously invested in, and specifically what their returns would be. And, you know, that's obviously congratulations that any particular enterprise should be receiving regarding that specific development. Now, here's the thing, dear listeners, and you obviously all would have heard and known, that I'm someone that was very skeptical specifically about potato, what do they call that thing? Potato, plantations actually being, not profit. The word is not profitable, but actually being feasible. Yes. Being feasible in a Namibian context, specifically because of Namibia's changing climate, because of the climate change discussion, and specifically also because of Namibia's primarily its unknown soil structures or soil types. When I say unknown, it's primarily because we've not seen many other particular endeavors bring about or bring or introduce a specific crop that requires a lot of water, a lot of care and maintenance, as well as also a lot of particular, if I can say, babysitting or nursing in that regard. Now, obviously, the project that, what's the gold mine's name, Beta Gold, has in the Otjodonjopo region, specifically where they're growing that grain, where they've got that grain farm, that in itself is one such particular endeavor where you would obviously go like, huh, you know, that's interesting. Why didn't we think about this a lot earlier? And then, secondly, the potato discussion starts off last year. It was in last year specifically where the, you know, the various proponents across Namibia were, I think it's the collaborative project between the European Union and the Namibia Agronomic Board, were obviously trying to convince, farmers in the northern areas, northern communal areas, specifically to try and transition over or expand into potato production. that obviously was something that I sat there scratching my head going like, why in a climate obviously that is very dry, has specific set rainfall scenarios and ultimately certain specific kinds of soil conditions, would we be advocating for potato? It does not say, like I've also said before, that a potato cannot grow. It's just a potato is a specific product, a specific agricultural product that requires a lot of attention. Now, as that congratulatory part, which technically forms part of our introduction, is out of the way, it actually has us look at the product itself, the potato. Yes, today's conversation is going to be potato-induced, and as every Sunday morning, you're in my company from 5 a.m. all the way up until 7 a.m., which obviously gives us the ideal time frame to focus in on this particular product. It's not to say it's the first time that Namibia has actually produced potatoes. No, that is not true. Namibia has been producing potatoes. And I mean, I'm not going to bring up those statistics that I've had from 2023, technically, which speaks from 2022 into 2023 from. But even then, those specific statistics from the Namibia Agronomic Board cited the conversation that was going on in Namibia, the imbalances that obviously exist, specifically that we have a lot of things that come from South Africa, and that we've got those particular windows during the year that allow local producers to sell their produce into the Namibian consumption market. And it's a discussion of allowing and helping and assisting the local producers to reach a particular platform, a plane, a specific level. It's almost like an upgrading level discussion for those of you that understand gaming terminology. And then to sustain us from that level that they've obviously reached. Now, here's the thing, dear listeners. This is not a harvest once a year discussion. This has to be a continuous supply, because if you understand where that product is used, that specific product, the potato, is used almost everywhere. And when I say almost everywhere, I'm talking about where it is directly consumed. It's not to say there's some massive agro-processing that uses the potato for various other products. No. What we continuously see is a scenario of, is the potato in the shop on the shelf whereby I can buy it directly? That's not the only use. Look at the fast food installations across Namibia. Fast food installations. Fast food implies this is food on the go, food that you buy and you take. You take it home, you take it to your car, you take it wherever. Fast food depends a lot on potato supply. Potato supply is one of, just like the main set meal next, you know, the other part of the meal, for example, whether or not it's fried chicken, or whether or not it's a hamburger, whether or not it is a hake, or calamari, or what's the other one's name? A calamari or prawn wrap, or whether it's fish and chips. Well, fish and, you know, the other, because fish is the one part side of that particular discussion. There's always a potato participating in the formalization and the completedness or the complete state of said meal. Now, as you look and you realize and you visualize, and I'm sorry for if I got your saliva glands, you know, kicking off some sort of a salivating function. I apologize for that. Don't worry. I'm trying to contain myself here as well, because the moment I start thinking about potatoes, I always, you know, my mind's eye always jumps to mashed potato, a little bit of some fried potato, or either some of those particular, you know, well-seasoned, fried and baked potato, dishes that I always enjoy. But centering back onto the discussion of the potato, we're taking a look specifically at key components in this morning's discussion about this specific vegetable. Now, here's the thing, dear listeners, and we'll quickly be taking a short musical break. If you did not know, and I'm going to start off on this aspect of trivia, this aspect of did you know? Did you know that the potato has a celebrated day identified by the UN? I did not know this, guys. I'll say it with a straight face. I did not know this. Did you guys know this? Guess when this day is? Every year, 30 May. Now, 30 May is identified, and it's not by one of the UN agencies. It's just overall. 30 May is identified as International Day of the Potato, or International Day of Potato. On this specific particular day, it highlights a contribution that a plant has made to the survival of us humans. A plant. Now, I think, there's a lot of plants that probably would be citing their own specific celebratory day or day of commemoration or recognition, because the potato itself has obviously been such a steadfast, important staple food for millions of humans across the world. Now, it is identified as a millennia-old food with origins in the South American Andes region that made its way to Europe in the 16th century and then spread around the world. Now, the potato is much more than a source of nourishment. Potatoes are important components of strategies to provide accessible and nutritious food. This is their particular way. This is obviously the UN agency's own way in terms of identifying the staple food, and improved livelihoods in rural and other areas where natural resources, especially arable land and water, are limited and inputs are expensive. Now, the crop's versatility and ability to grow in a variety of conditions make it an advantageous crop choice. Potatoes are also a climate-friendly crop as they produce low levels of greenhouse gas emissions in comparison to other crops. So this particular crop has a positive role to play specifically in the global climate change discussion, as well as also that in the past 10 years, the global production of potatoes has actually increased by 10%. Leading to growth in employment and income, but more work, obviously, is needed because, they talk here about harnessing the full potential of the crop in the quest to end hunger and malnutrition globally. And if you take a deep dive in Namibia's particular discussion, obviously discussion in Namibia has been about, how do we look forward? How do we look towards the future with regards to the discussions of the overall climate change discussion and other particular scenarios, which are key components? I mean, because you've got to look at where are we going? On previous occasions, obviously, of the Home Run and other particular programs that I've hosted, The central scenario in every discussion that we find ourselves has been, how do you end instances of malnutrition, which is basically the severity of hunger, the zero hunger SDG? How do you end food banks and all those, the existence of these particular mechanisms? How do you end certain particular components? And how do you progress forwards with regards to certain projects and initiatives that are aimed at trying to solve certain particular programs or problems or issues that obviously would exist? Now, here's the thing. there, from the potato side of things, there is more than 5,000 varieties. Well, the UN says they are identified as improved varieties, but there's more than 5,000 varieties of the potato. I don't know which ones we see in our shops. I don't know which one actually, you know, the potato growers have delved into to make use of specifically for their particular cultivation-based exercises. But to select from a list of more than 5,000 variants of the potato is unique, is important, and ultimately plays a major role. Now, before we actually continue with our discussion, dear listeners, we'll quickly be taking a short musical break. After the musical break, we'll come back and we'll head into the rest of our very interesting but also food-induced discussion on this morning session of My Sunday Morning Take here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And we'll be back right after this.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Thank you. Once I had a dream, I was falling from the sky, coming down like running water, passing by myself in life. In the morning, I would wake to the sound of someone's voice, like little whispers to the silence. I moved through the dark, a long black night.
Coming back there from the sounds of the war against drugs and ultimately the song Thinking of a Place obviously makes us think about those potatoes that I started off on earlier this session. Now, as you're still in my company, as mentioned, all the way up until 7 a.m., that's from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., we find ourselves about 20 minutes out from the top of the hour at 6 a.m. Yo, if I said 6 p.m., that would have been a bit dramatic. But anyway, getting back to where we left off, it's specifically just what we started off on was obviously the discussion on the varieties, as well as also the specific celebratory day or commemorative day of the potato, or in honor of the potato, if I should rather put it like that. Because it technically is one that is identified as being in honor of said particular, tuber, because it's identified as a tuber. So, some of the particular important aspects to identify here, dear listeners, is that the potato itself, according to the Food and Agricultural Organization of the UN, is that it is a crop of enormous global significance. Why? It's because through its widespread cultivation and consumption currently today, the crop contributes to key objectives of obviously of the SDG scenario discussions. But keep that one side. One of the key particular goals, obviously, that it tries to meet is that of the zero hunger goal, and that it also helps in promoting sustainable agriculture and advancing economic opportunities. Because potatoes are not just a staple in the diets of many people, but they also provide key opportunities for employment and sustainable economic growth along the value chains that they are positioned on. Now, just stepping a little bit away from this particular aspect of, you know, the celebration, commemoration of said particular potato. The potato itself is identified as a starchy tuberous vegetable native to the Americas. Yes, native to the Americas. It's not from Africa and it's not from Europe. It's not from Asia and it's not from Oceania. That is consumed as a staple food in many parts of the world. Now, they are underground stem tubers of the plant Solanum tuberosum, which is a perennial in the nightshade family of Solanaceae. Obviously, it comes from a specific group of a broader family of the same tuber family. Now, the wild potato species, obviously, which potatoes stem from. Remember, in many cases, everything was firstly wild before it got domesticated. Meaning, when us humans began using it, identifying it, and then realizing the potential that it has, and thus, gradually started depending on this particular item in the wild. And there's obviously the discussions based upon the cattle breeds, in terms of, the domestication of, you know, the ancestors of the modern cow and the modern bull and the, you know, the whole bovine discussion. And you try to factor in also when looking at many of the other particular, animals and plants associated to the agricultural processes around the world and not just in Namibia, is that you will always find a wild variant presence of this particular plant, of this particular aspect. Or in many cases, you know, what was the scenario, for example, some of the livestock, when it comes to livestock, what were their wild versions beforehand? Before they were domesticated. Now, the wild potato species can be found from the southern United States to southern Chile, which obviously shows you how long that distance is from southern America, the United States, to southern South America, specifically Chile. The genetic studies that have been done on this particular crop indicated that the cultivated potato has a single origin in the area of present-day southern Peru and the extreme northwestern Bolivia. If you don't know what Peru and Bolivia are predominantly known for, I will tell you now. Well, Peru obviously has Machu Picchu in it, which makes it a unique historical site and tourist destination for that particular reason. However, associated to where or the positioning of where you find Machu Picchu, is that in the discussion of the potato, both Peru and Bolivia are known as countries with high altitudes. Let me say that again. Both Peru and Bolivia are known as countries with high altitudes. So for if you see, like the explainer that I just gave you right now about how the aspects of or certain particular dimensions or variants of the wild potato, where they were, you know, were prominent back then in history, is that as in particular positions, that's obviously Chile, that's obviously southern US or from the southern United States, and then obviously in Peru and Bolivia, where this particular plant obviously thrived in. Now, the southern US is a pretty broad statement and a pretty broad area to work from. But there's one particular thing that I am not, or that I, you know, have not given its particular accreditation or its particular a recognition of the work that it sometimes contributes towards the existence and survival of many plant species, is that the animal kingdom plays a very active role specifically in many cases to the survival of many plant species. Why do I say this? Well, just sometimes go and see what birds sometimes do. Birds drag on, consume, eat, plant seeds, plant nectars and the likes. And then they, you know, spread through, obviously through their particular contribution naturally, their toilet contributions. They spread those seeds across the world, across the bush, across the wild, wherever it is. And then you find that specific plant germinating, anchoring itself through its root system in that specific locality where that bird had stopped for a brief moment. I say for a brief moment. Yeah. I know what I'm talking about because I find a specific plant species that we've been trying to kill off in our yard popping up everywhere else in the other side of the yard where we did not intentionally try to replant the plant. It's a specific plant that's identified by local organizations here in Namibia for being a poisonous and an invasive plant species. Why I say poisonous? It poisons the soil against other plants. It's like the prosopi tree. It does the same thing. It, you know, releases a specific toxin into the soil so that other plants cannot grow around it. And then it technically like monopolizes the soil and its nutrients for itself, and then it grows the biggest, the quickest, and all that, because plants also have a survival trait. And you get this particular scenario. Now, around a prosopi tree, you always find clay soil. The soil doesn't drain very well. The soil always, when there's a rainy season, the soil always contributes to standing water. And secondly, the scenario around a prosopi tree is that you don't even find grass because, as I mentioned, it's not fond of other plants around it. Getting back to the potato scenario, Potatoes were first domesticated in these particular parts of the world. That's obviously in the Americas, about 7 to 10,000 years ago. So between 7,000 and 10,000 years ago, the potato was domesticated in these parts of the world. And this is from a specific species in the Brevicole complex. That's Solanaceae Brevicole complex. Now, the Solanaceae Brevicole complex, or specific variant of the potato or plant, is a tuberous perennial plant of the family Solanaceae, as I explained, and this particular species is native to South America. Now, the image I've got in front of me, dear listeners, is one that is literally a plant with a flower. Now, if you don't know, when you're trying to, in many cases, from what I've seen, if you're trying to grow potatoes, you try to avoid the plant from growing a lot of flowers and from the stem growing too much, because what you want is that the plant should contribute to the nutrients of the product that you want below the ground, below soil. Let me say it again. If you are dealing with a plant that produces fruit or a vegetable and has a flower to it, you don't want the thing to flower. You want the thing to contribute or redirect those nutrients to the fruit that you want. I also discovered this recently because I was wondering, how nice would it be for a fruit producing, or because the potato is deemed as a fruit when you look at it in terms of the byproduct that the plant produces. There's the plant, and then there's the actual product that you want, which is the said particular fruit of the plant. But it's not classified as fruit in the consumption discussion that we sometimes have. Because remember, this is a plant that creates. Even a peanut would be considered a fruit because it's a byproduct of the plant. The same too for the tomato. The same too for, any of the other particular agricultural products, because what you want is, if the plant has the ability to flower, you don't want the plant to flower because that's a redirection of nutrients into another aspect of the plant. You want to redirect those nutrients into the fruit. Great stuff, eh? So when you're sitting with that particular visualization in your mind, in your mind's eye, in terms of, what does the potato that you consume on a regular basis, what does it have? Potatoes are loaded with a lot of nutrients. They are one of the particular staple foods specifically that you don't need to combine another particular starch product with. You can just eat the potato like that. In many cases, it helps with, when people have suffered certain particular deficiencies of certain particular nutrients in their body, in their daily diet, a potato is the answer to go for. Now, many varieties of the potato are cultivated in the Andes region of South America, where the species is indigenous. Now, the Spanish introduced potatoes to Europe in the second half of the 16th century from the Americas, and they were a staple food in many parts of the world and an integral part of much of the world's food supply. Now, following millennia of selective breeding, there are now over 5,000 different varieties of potato. The potato remains an essential crop in Europe, still till today, especially Northern and Eastern Europe, where per capita production is still the highest in the world. It's pretty shocking in its own right. While the most rapid expansion in production during the 21st century was in Southern and Eastern Asia, with China and India leading the world production as of 2023. Now, like the tomato and the nightshades, the potato is in the genus of Solanum. The aerial parts of the potato contain the toxin solanin, I say aerial parts. Normal potato tubers that have been grown and stored properly produce glycoalkaloids in negligible amounts. If you don't know what glycoalkaloids are, glycoalkaloids are a family of chemical compounds derived from alkaloids to which sugar groups are appended. Now, several are potentially toxic, most notably the poisons commonly found in the plant species Solanum dulcamara and other plants in the genus Solanum, including the potato. So that means there's a sugar molecule attached to this particular alkaloid, or is comprised in this particular structure. And obviously it, you know, identifies certain particular problematic scenarios, you know, in terms of identifying what kind of a plant we're dealing with. Remember, this is obviously a plant that has a defense mechanism in it. Many plants, many species in the natural environment have their defensive mechanisms associated to, in many cases, the actual fruit or the product that you want to consume. What is important to identify is, you obviously, as mentioned, you try to deal obviously with a particular, plant that has a fibrous root system. Plus it's meaning that the roots obviously don't go deep. However, the plant itself grows obviously from or develops a massive tuber below the ground. Now, when we look at the domestication function as started off or where we started off from, the wild potato species that was obviously first encountered by the ancient humans back then, and, you know, they realized, you know what, we can do something with this particular crop, and this is where it grows, and this is what it looks like. The wild potato species occurred, as mentioned, in southern US to Chile, and then obviously the extreme parts, certain particular extreme parts, or extreme parts of Bolivia and Peru. But it was first domesticated, as mentioned, in Peru and Bolivia, in the pre-Columbian farmers period around Lake Titicaca. I'm not making this up. Lake Titicaca is actually a name. Now, this is a specific lake area, which is a freshwater lake in the Andes Mountains on the border of Bolivia and Peru, and is often called the highest navigable lake in the world because of its altitude and how high it sits above sea level. Now, Titicaca is the largest lake in South America, both in terms of the volume of water and the surface level, and it has a surface elevation of at least being 3,800 meters above sea level. Yeah, it's pretty high. It's pretty high. Now, when you're obviously seeing this or hearing this particular scenario, this is obviously as the ancient or the ancient civilizations in South America realized, you know, there's a freshwater source, and we can obviously, looking at the soil structures around that particular freshwater source, there is an opportunity to do something regarding this particular, you know, this particular fruit. Now, the potatoes were domesticated there in, that specific region, of southern Peru, northwestern Bolivia, 7 to 10,000 years ago from the species of Solanum brevicaule. And the earliest archaeological because they didn't have cameras back then, but the earliest archaeologically a verified potato tuber, the remains of that tuber have been found at the coastal site of Ancon, which is in central Peru. Now, that dated back to 2500 BC, specifically as Ancon, which is an archaeological site in the north of, the Bay of Ancon, in the Ancon district of Peru, is identified as one of the most important centers of the Peruvian archaeology and features a vast necropolis of the pre-Hispanic era with countless funerary sites, not funeral, please, funerary, which obviously speaks towards the ancient scenario, the ancient civilization scenario in terms of, you know, what people were doing there. Now, funerary obviously is a process or relates to the commemoration of the dead, meaning that it was technically like a burial site. And that obviously this is something that was uncovered, because usually it's from burial sites that many archaeologists alternatively study the most, as opposed to discovering, you know, sites where people were living. In many cases, obviously, that particular example that I just cited to you is that in many cases around human history, they found sites where people have lived and occupied, meaning, you know, this is where people were active and they were obviously, you know, enjoying certain particular developments. But funeral sites, burial sites, or commemoration sites of the dead of many previous civilizations are obviously some of the particular keen installations and finds that the archaeologists, they love the most about it. I mean, even if you go read about what happened with the volcanic eruption that leveled the ancient Roman city of Pompeii, that will also help to explain to you a scenario of, you know, what actually went wrong in that discussion. So, the indications obviously from that funeral site in Ancon, or that coastal site that was discovered there in Ancon in Peru, dates back to 2500 BC. The most widely cultivated variety, obviously, as mentioned a little bit earlier, which is Solanum tuberosum, is indigenous to the Chiloé archipelago. And the Chiloé archipelago is a specific area which is a group of islands lying off the coast of Chile in the Los Lagos region. And it is separated from the mainland Chile by the Chacao Channel in the north, the Sea of Chiloé in the east, and the Gulf of Corcovado in the southeast. And that in this particular region, if you ever like have the luxury like I have in terms of looking at a photo, it is a region that is very, 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 very abundant in potentially soil that is high in nutrition value in terms of, you know, obviously the fertility levels for you to conduct certain particular agricultural processes in that region. Now, since some of the earliest particular most widely cultivated varieties, which obviously stem from a specific part in South America, which is in the Chiloé archipelago, is that the most widely cultivated variety, this Solanum tuberosum, has been cultivated by the local indigenous people since before the Spanish conquest in that area of Chile. Now, before we continue, we're going to take a short break, a short musical break, and from the musical break, we'll come back heading into what would be the last hour here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, and this is my Sunday morning take.
I am ready for the rapture. I am reaching for the light. But my heart screams hallelujah when I hear your battle cry. Yeah, yeah. I know we're so young, but I swear you're the one for me. Yeah, yeah. I knew it right from the start. Just some kind of heaven, that's all that I need. Of love. I don't need a symphony to sing my song, 'cause there's a choir of angels deep inside my lungs, and I can hear them sing.
I like my stone washed in them with the long crease in them and my snake skin boots. I like my GTO down a two-lane road with an open windshield view. I'm telling the truth, baby, they ain't got nothing like you. I can wear my Chanel watch, but nothing makes the time stop like you walking in a room. Just like the diamonds on my grill, all the way you make me feel like a special kind of fool. Yeah, it's true, baby, they ain't got nothing on you. Time is up. All the shine of the crown might be good for looking, but when it all breaks down, no, they ain't got nothing on you. Like a lake down south where we all hang out with the Texas barbecue. Like the sound of a song on my old guitar, laying down some two chord truth. Yeah, it's true, baby, they ain't got nothing on you. How are you? All the gold in the world, no, it don't mean much. Can't take you with you when your time is up. All the shine of the crown might be good for looking, when it all breaks down, oh, they ain't got nothing on you. Are you?
Coming back there from the sounds specifically of Leon Bridges. Before that, it was the sounds of Jungle. And before that, well, let's just say it sort of like, got us into the particular emotions here on your number one talk radio station. Obviously that being Eagle FM and this being my Sunday morning take to where we lead off into the rest of our discussion for this session. Now, the pivotal thing regarding the find of the potato. I call it the find because obviously someone else discovered it, has been using it, has been working with it, has obviously been living off of it before the Spanish showed up, and then realized, you know what, there are similarities in climates back in Europe as well as also in South America. Let's try and get, you know, this particular product back there. The reason why I am citing that similarity discussion is because if you remember back to earlier this year, specifically on one of the earlier editions of my Sunday Morning Take, I did talk about one of the particular sort of like famines that have happened in human history. And a couple of the more notable ones was based upon the Irish famines. There were two. There was the first Irish famine and there was the second Irish famine. The first Irish famine was primarily based upon a severe cold front that impacted the agricultural sector of Ireland. in the 1700s. And then you had the Great Irish Famine, which was the one that impacted the monoculturalism of Ireland in the 1800s, specifically in 1830, primarily because the Irish farmers back then, as well as also the landlords back then, decided to only farm with one thing. Now remember, just to provide you with a distinction between the two famines that occurred in Ireland, is that the first one, they had a variety of agricultural produce that they were engaging in, meaning they were growing a whole bunch of stuff. And then obviously this was just a weather anomaly during their winter period that literally showed up and persisted a little bit longer than should. But the great Irish famine is the one of serious concern, because this one was where most of the farmers were growing the same crop. Yeah, hence the word that I used, monoculturalism, identifying that many farmers were just using the same method or were growing the same thing, and this was the potato. So what happened in the Great Irish Famine of the 1830s is that a blight occurred, potato blight. What is potato blight? Potato blight is a specific kind of a fungal infection or specific infection that attacks potatoes and thus obviously spoils the harvest. Now, we've got to look at the spread of the potato, because this is obviously where we get into the gist, into the juice, into the core discussions. Now, following the Spanish conquest of the Inca Empire, the Spanish introduced the potato to Europe in the second half of the 16th century as part of the Columbian Exchange. Now, if you don't know what the Columbian Exchange is or was, is that the Columbian Exchange, also known as the Columbian Interchange, was the widespread transfer of plants, animals, and diseases between the New World, because the New World was identified as the whole of the Americas, North, Central, and South America, in the Western Hemisphere, and the Old World, identified as us, Africa and Eurasia, obviously, which includes Europe and Central Asia, in the Eastern Hemisphere, from the late 15th century onwards. Now, the particular name, obviously, that stems from this, or that the Columbia Exchange, you know, derives itself from, it was named after Christopher Columbus, and is related, obviously, to the European colonization and global trade, following his 1492 voyage. Now, some of the exchanges were deliberate, while others were unintended. For example, communicable diseases. Communicable diseases is a term known as infections or diseases that can be transferred, of the Old World origin, resulting in at least 80-95% reduction in the indigenous populations of the Americas from the 15th century onwards and to their near extinction in the Caribbean. So the Columbian Exchange identifies maize, which is your mealie, the corn, wheat, the turkey, cattle. Literally cattle. So you saw cattle going from the Eastern Hemisphere to the Western Hemisphere, turkey from the Western to the Eastern, maize from the Western to the Eastern, and wheat from the Eastern to the Western. Syphilis is also there, because obviously it's a particular transfer. Smallpox, the other direction. Smoking from one, and Christianity from the other. It's just but a few to be cited. Now, the staple was subsequently conveyed by European mariners, meaning possibly including the Russian-American Company, to territories and ports throughout the world, especially to their colonies or their colonial settlements. Now, European and colonial farmers were slow to adopt farming potatoes. However, after 1750, they became an important food staple and a field crop, and played a major role in the European 19th century population boom. So the 19th century is literally that from 1800 to 1900. or from 1800 to 1899. Now, according to conservative estimates, the introduction of the potato was responsible for a quarter of the growth in the Old World population and urbanization between 1700 to 1900. However, a lack of genetic diversity due to the very limited number of varieties initially introduced left the crop vulnerable to disease, which obviously was the potato blight that I mentioned a little bit earlier that struck Ireland. In 1845, a plant disease known as late blight, caused by the fungus like Omicita phytophthora infestans, spread rapidly through the poorer communities of Western Ireland as well as parts of the Scottish Highlands, resulting in the crop failures that led to the Great Irish Famine. Now, the International Potato Center, which is based in Lima, Peru, holds 4,870 types of potato germplasm, most of which are traditional landrace cultivars. In 2009, a draft sequence of the potato genome was made, containing 12 chromosomes and 860 million base pairs, making it a medium-sized plant genome. So obviously, if you don't understand what that primarily speaks towards, is obviously identifying the various, important aspects and varieties of the plant itself through its genetic structures, and thus explaining to whoever around the world specifically that this is primarily how the plant is being, I almost said amplified, but rather how it is being literally developed forward for other particular uses, which technically should explain to you an aspect of genetic modification. Now, it had been thought that most potato cultivars derived from a single origin in southern Peru and the extreme northwestern Bolivia, from a species in the Solanum brevicol complex. But DNA analysis, however, has indicated that more than 99% of all current varieties of potatoes are direct descendants of a subspecies that once grew in the lowlands, the low-lying areas of south-central Chile. Most modern potatoes grown in North America arrived through European settlement and not independently from South American sources. And at least one wild potato species, the Solanum fendleri, occurs in North America. It is used in breeding for resistance to a nematode species that attacks cultivated potatoes. If you don't know what a nematode species is, nematodes, or roundworms, or eelworms, constitute the phylum Nematoda. This is a species in the phylum which inhabits a broad range of environments. So it's a kind of worm or a kind of pest. Now, a secondary center of genetic variability of the potato is in Mexico, where important wild species that have been used extensively in modern breeding are found, such as the hexaploid Solanum demisum, used as a source of resistance to the devastating late blight disease. And another relative native to this particular region of South America is Solanum bulbocastanum, which has been used to genetically engineer the potato to resist potato blight. Many such wild relatives are useful for breeding resistance to the particular, late blight or potato blight instance in that scenario, which is the fungal infection. Now, little of the diversity found in Solanum ancestral and wild relatives is found outside of the original South American range. Now, this makes these South American species highly valuable in breeding. The importance of the potato to humanity is recognized, as I mentioned a little bit earlier at the start of our discussion this morning, by the UN, by celebrating the International Day of the Potato, which is on 30 May every year. And it actually began last year, 2024. So, As we're obviously looking at this particular notion in terms of the potato and its particular contributions, is that the discussion is very, very promising regarding this particular crop. Why do I say this? Just hold on. It's primarily about the yields that have been produced. So when you look at the yield, obviously, of a product, now, one of the concerning things that always pop up is the discussion regarding sustainability. How can you sustain the levels of production that you're obviously producing? One of the key particular scenarios is obviously what have been the quantities. Now, it indicates here specifically that China is the world's largest potato producer, followed by India, followed by Ukraine, then the US, and then Russia, and that the rest of the world actually combined has a massive contribution of 383 million tons of potato. So China, at 2023, sat with 93.4 million tons. India, as at 2023 as well. All these stats are 2023 stats. India sat with 60.1, Ukraine 21.4, the US 20, and Russia 19.4. Which actually means it's a lot of tons. Now, the world production of potatoes, were 383 million tons in 2023, which was led by China, who produced 25% of the total, and India as a major secondary producer in that scenario. Now, the world dedicated 18.6 million hectares, which is 46 million acres, to potato cultivation in 2010. The world average yield was 17.4 tons per hectare, which is about 7.8 short tons per acre. The US was the most productive country with a nationwide average yield of 44.3 tons per hectare. New Zealand farmers have demonstrated some of the best commercial yields in the world, ranging between 60 and 80 tons per hectare, and some reporting yields of 88 tons of potatoes per hectare. Unfortunately, there is a big particular gap among various countries between high and low yields. Because Namibia reflects as a very low yield country. We reflect as a very, very, very low yield country. Even with the same variety of potato, average potato yields in developed economies range between 38 to 44 metric tons per hectare. China and India accounted for over a third of the world's production in 2010 and had yields of 14.7 and 19.9 metric tons per hectare. And the yield gap between farms in developing economies and developed economies represents an opportunity loss of over 400 million metric tons. So that includes us in Namibia as well. For example, if there are more potato producers popping up in Namibia to primarily contribute to this scenario of, you know, global production and the likes, it would be a unique particular indicator in terms of how farmers, you know, would try and achieve something. However, I sit with a little bit of a caveat. Why do I sit with a caveat? Because when it comes to crop farmers specifically, and this is across the board, even across the world, crop farmers are, they have a positive to play in terms of that they help with sustainability and the sustaining of the diets of humanity, but they also play a pivotal, they also play a dual role, which is a negative to the environment, because crop farmers need land to place their crop on, which makes it problematic because crop farmers try to protect their produce from small animals, from pests, from insects and the likes. And as Helmut and I, myself, in our discussion that we had about 2 weeks back regarding the Auditor General's Office report on whether or not the Ministry of Agriculture can actually tackle and combat or meet the demands of the SDG 2, Zero Hunger, by focusing in on two particular sub-goals in that goal, which is using practices that are environmentally friendly or promoting practices that are environmentally friendly, and secondly, try to combat or try to achieve food security. They failed in both. This is a compliance assessment. They failed in both. Now, before I continue, dear listeners, we'll quickly be taking a short musical break. A short musical break, and after that, we'll be getting into which would be this last quarter of today's program here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, and this is my Sunday morning take.
Little Debbie's from the corner store, car bruises at Hillside, drinking that fruit punch on a Saturday. Brandon dancing on the front porch, his big brother was George. He'd always borrow my tapes and lose them things. Rock, paper, scissors, 'cause you know the winner would be the first to play Nintendo 64. In the summertime, on the south side, it's alright. In the summertime, on the south side, it's just fine. In Panther City, all the crackheads and prostitutes on Rosedale, my father said go straight home. Oh, I catch hell. Don't walk around them streets at night. There was a girl, she lived on Pinky Street, her name was Jamie. I used to drive our house every day. That was my first taste of love. In the summertime, on the south side, it's alright. In the summertime, on the south side, it's just fine. In Panther City, in Panther City, yeah. And feel something, to remind myself and feel something. In the summertime, on the south side, it's alright. In the summertime, yeah, 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 yeah. In the summertime, on the south side, all right. In the summertime, on the south side. In the summertime, sometimes I go back there in my mind. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right.
feel, yeah.
Coming back there from the sounds of Juanes with the song Mayo, and before that it was a little bit of Leon Bridges once again, also just laying the particular mood for us in terms of our discussion as we obviously head into what would be the last 20 minutes of today's particular engagement. Now, as we're obviously citing the developments that have obviously taken place in terms of the exchange, the Colombian exchange, and the particular, you know, bringing the potato forward and the likes, and obviously also contributing towards global population's expansion and boom, and thus the sustenance and maintenance of said particular boom, is that there still persists a large particular production gap between various regions in the world. The major agricultural economies, obviously, that produce the most are all in the Northern Hemisphere. Even if the New Zealand farmers have been cited in this particular example, they're still not, you know, at sort of like the top of the line in terms of, not top of the line or not first in line in terms of being the largest producers in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, some of the particular important factors that obviously exist is the factors regarding the yield gap between farms in developing economies and developed economies that represent an opportunity loss of over 400 million metric tons. Now, potato yields are determined by factors such as the crop breed, the seed age and quality, crop management practices and the plant environment, improvements in one or more of these yields determinants, and a closure of the yield gap can be a major boost to food supply and farmers' incomes in the developing world. But the food energy yield of potatoes, which is about 95 gigajoules per hectare, is higher than that of maize, rice, wheat, and even soybean for that matter. Meaning the amount of energy that your body can extract from the potato is way higher than any of those particular crops that I just mentioned. But then there's obviously the broader discussion at hand, which is the climate change discussion. Because what effect does the continuous climatic changes have on the production of food, specifically on the production of potatoes, in the global discussion? Now, climate change has been predicted to have a significant effect on the global potato production. And like many other crops, potatoes are likely to be affected by changes in atmospheric carbon dioxide, temperature and precipitation, which is your rainfall, as well as also interactions between these factors. As well as affecting potatoes directly, climate change will also affect the distribution in the populations of many potato diseases and pests. That is the other particular concern. Now, while the potato is less important than maize, rice, wheat, and soybean, which are collectively responsible for around 2/3 of all calories consumed by humans, both directly and indirectly as an animal feed, it still is one of the world's most important food crops. Although, and altogether, one 2003 estimate suggested that the future, which is 2040 to 2069, worldwide potato yield would be 18 to 32% lower than it was at the time, which would be driven in those estimates of that particular discussion by declines in hotter areas like sub-Saharan Africa. Unless farmers and potato cultivars can adapt to the new environmental conditions. Now, potato plants and their crop yields are predicted to benefit from carbon dioxide fertilization effects, or from this particular effect. Now, if you don't know what the carbon dioxide fertilization effect or carbon fertilization effect is, it causes an increased rate of photosynthesis while limiting leaf transpiration in plants. Both processes result from increased levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide. And the belief is that there would be a potential increase and growth of the plant, obviously. A reduction in water consumption through lower transpiration from stomata. And an increase in starch content in the edible tubers. However, the potatoes are more sensitive to soil water deficits than some other staple crops like wheat. In the UK, for example, the amount of arable land suitable for rain-fed potato production is predicted to decrease by at least 75%. These changes are likely to lead to increased demand for irrigation water, particularly during the potato growing season, and that potatoes also grow best under temperate conditions. Now, you'll ask me, what is temperate? Temperate is slightly cooler than Namibia, the whole of Namibia. Not even Zambezi or the areas that have rivers close to them, like Zambezi, the two Kavango regions, the Kunene region, that toppest part of the Kunene region, or even the whole of the Karas region at the bottom that is bordered onto a river, or even the coastal area of the coastal areas of Namibia. Temperate speaks to being way cooler than this, than Namibia. Way cooler. So, temperatures above 30 degrees Celsius have negative effects on potato crops, from physiological damage such as brown spots on tubers to slower growth, premature sprouting, and lower starch content. These effects reduce crop yield, affecting both the number and the weight of tubers, and as a result, areas where current temperatures are near the limits of potatoes' temperature range, the potato has a temperature range, which is much of sub-Saharan Africa, will likely suffer large reductions in potato crop yields in the future. And on the other hand, lower temperatures or low temperatures reduce potato growth and present risk of frost damage. Now, this obviously means that there's another particular subject matter we also have to look into, which is that of the changes even in the pests and diseases discussion. The climate change discussion itself is also predicted to affect many potato pests and diseases. And some of these particular changes include insect pests such as the potato tuber moth and the Colorado potato beetle, which are predicted to spread into areas currently too cold for them to live in. Then you've also got another particular aspect, which is aphids, which are aphids are small sap-sucking insects in the family Aphididae. Their common names also include the green fly and the black fly. Now, aphids, which act as vectors for many potato viruses, might spread under increased temperatures as well. Pathogens causing potato blackleg disease, sometimes known as dikea, grow and reproduce faster at higher temperatures. Bacterial infections such as the Ralstonia solanacearum will benefit from higher temperatures and spread more easily through flash flooding. Late blight benefits from higher temperatures and wetter conditions. Wetter, meaning soaked conditions. Late blight is predicted to become a greater threat in some areas, for example, like in Finland, and become a lesser threat in other areas, for example, like in the UK. And some of these particular indicators obviously speaks towards, you know, what has been, you know, what are the models that they're obviously working on in terms of where the potential negative areas are. You know, when you sit and do there your SWOT analysis about a situation, that is usually the particular discussion that emanates from this scenario. Now, they have cited some particular aspects, for example, in the adaptation strategy discussion regarding, you know, what could potentially be done. And then remember, most of these adaptation strategies come from countries like Russia, like Canada, and so forth, which are predominantly in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, potato production is expected to decline in many areas due to the hotter temperatures and the decreased water availability. Conversely, the production is also predicted to become possible in high altitude and latitude areas where it has been limited because of frost damage. This could include Canada and Russia. Now, this will also shift potato production to cooler areas, mitigating much of the projected decline in the yield. However, this may trigger competition for land between potato crops and other land uses, mostly due to changes in water and temperature regimes. And this has been a specific conversation I've continuously, focused on the competition for land, specifically even when you take a look at it in a Namibian context. Now, other approaches, through the development of varieties or cultivars which would be more adapted to altered conditions. Now, this can be done through traditional plant breeding techniques and genetic modifications. These techniques also allow for the selection of specific traits as a new cultivar is also developed. Certain traits such as the heat stress tolerance, drought tolerance, fast growth or early maturation and disease resistance. All these particular aspects may play an important role in creating new cultivars able to maintain yields under stressors induced by climate change. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of our discussion and subject matter for this morning. However, we'll be stepping into a short musical break, which will take us primarily to the top of the hour at 7 a.m. And at that particular level, we'll be saying our goodbyes. And you can catch me later on during the course of the week, obviously, on The Home Run, where Helmut and I, obviously, we dissect much of the particular discussions and talking points coming through from in and around Namibia and around the world as well.